Welcome to the Hockey Strength Podcast, the official podcast of the world's best resource for hockey strength and conditioning information. HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode number 97 of the Hockey Strength Podcast, the official podcast of SCAF and ProHockeyStrength.com. Today's guest is Adam Virgil. Adam is currently pursuing his PhD in Human Functioning and Rehabilitation Science at the University of Vermont. He also serves as a sports science coordinator at UVM, where he organizes the collection, interpretation, visualization, and applied integration of physiological data from the men's ice hockey and men's basketball teams. Prior to UVM, Adam was the assistant strength coach and sports scientist for the New York Rangers from 2013 to 2019. And through his personal brand, Adam creates tools and sports science resources that include Microsoft Excel and Google Sheets tutorials, plug-and-play sheets and files, and infographics, and you can find all of that on his website, adamvirgil.com. In today's episode, the theme is Adam's journey going from UVM to the New York Rangers and then back to his PhD at UVM, what sports science is, and in particular, what he's looking at with his research for his PhD. So this is a really fun episode. Adam and I had a lot of fun, and I hope you enjoy it. So without further ado, here is Adam Virgil. Adam, welcome to the Hockey Strength Podcast. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks. So we're kind of in a reverse situation here. You are in my home area in Burlington, Vermont, and I am in New York City, where you used to work for the Rangers, as we'll talk a bit about. So I think it's just funny this kind of like place reversal here. How are things in Vermont?
They're great. Pretty low-key from a COVID standpoint. And, you know, you're holding down the fort for me. I'm holding it down for you, and it'll all be good. We got each other's backs here.
That's exactly. I want to start with what was your start in strength conditioning?
My start was just through school. I studied exercise and movement science. That was the path that I wanted to go down, more so not necessarily strength and conditioning, but just enhancing athletic performance in any way that I could. So I also minored in nutrition because I felt that had a large impact on performance as well. But, you know, I was taught through school how to periodize programs and cue athletes and run them through them. And that's where it started. Then I got hired on by Reg Grant, who was head strength coach of the Rangers at the time. And that's that. I was really fortunate to get a job right out of school and took off from there.
Well, let's back up to that. Just fortunate to get hired by the Rangers right from an undergrad at UVM. How did that come about, A? And what do you think it was about your skill set that made you a really good fit to slide into right into professional hockey?
Well, I don't, this is going to sound bad. I don't think I was a good fit to slide right into professional hockey. They took a big chance, and I think it worked out okay. But I pretty much, so during my tenure at school, I had a relationship with a professor here, and I was just really curious about everything. So I would volunteer to, you know, help run the UVM ice hockey athletes through Wingate testing and in different tests and help them with running camps and kind of just ask a lot of questions. And when I graduated, he gave me a call during the summer when I was still here in good old Burlington. And he said, "Hey, Adam, I heard about this gig. I think you'd be a good fit for it. You might get a call from someone in a couple of days." And then a couple of days later, I get a call from Reg. And I kind of thought, and he introduced himself as the head strength and conditioning coach for the Rangers. I thought it was a joke because this professor, he liked to joke with me all the time. So I kind of played it off. But then the next thing I know, I'm sending in a resume and doing an interview and all that stuff. But to come back to your question, I think that a lot of the stuff that I did during undergrad, just the curiosity that I had and willingness to help others and involvement in exercise and movement science, it, for whatever reason, that professor pulled my name out of a hat to give to Reg to call. And that's how I got the job. It was through knowing that professor, but also at the same time, I think doing some extracurricular things that painted me in a certain light.
And now you end up right after you finish school, you're shipped down to New York, and you're working all of a sudden for the New York Rangers, and you're probably watching Henrik Lundqvist and all these other pretty famous Rangers walk around. What was that experience like, just your first few weeks on the job?
It was interesting. thing, but I never really skated. So I was kind of a basketball guy growing up. In the winter, I played basketball. So when I got to the Rangers, you know, I'm seeing these people, but to me, they're just people. Like, I'm coming from a college environment also. So I don't really understand the magnitude of being a professional athlete. So when I see a guy getting help by someone putting their weights on a bar, I'm like, why are you helping him? Let him do it himself. Tell him to rack his own weights. I didn't know these guys. So I guess it's a little different in that sense where I wasn't really mesmerized by any of the stardom, I guess, that I was exposed to.
And your role was just strength conditioning at first, your first few years?
There you go. So part of my job was to help manage the data collection. And I didn't really know what that meant, but I did know going into the job that there was some data being collected. And because I guess I was interested in research and technology, that I'd be involved with this stuff. So I was hands-on with the athletes, implementing programs a little bit. And at the same time, I was collecting a lot of information from them. For example, we had, you know, strength and conditioning software platforms that we were trying to put our programs into and relay those programs through that software platform. And then the athletes were wearing devices when they were on the ice and a bunch of other things. And eventually I got really interested in this information because through school, I was taught how to periodize programs and cue athletes, but I wasn't exposed to all this different technology and the metrics and the interpretation of what everything meant. So I started trying to figure that out a little bit. And then I started trying to figure out how to visualize it and analyze it a little bit. And then I eventually reported back to Reg and some of the stuff he enjoyed and thought was beneficial for the programming side of things. And then more questions came about from the data. So then it reached other people and other people had questions. And eventually what all this led to was me spending a lot of time on the computer when I think my primary job was to implement programs when I needed to, but I was always taken away by the computer to perform these tasks, to answer the questions that people had. So that's where the sports science stuff really began.
We're going to get to sports science in a moment, but I want to underscore already, I see a similarity in your path. In you took the extra step to go after some of your curiosities and explore them. In this case, it was a lot of testing and analyzing numbers and all of that stuff. And that ended up leading to almost creating your own opportunity.
Yeah, it literally did.
And I think, yeah. And I think that's just like a super cool lesson for everyone, that sometimes you just kind of have to take initiative with things and explore your own curiosities and see where that takes you. And it might not be a path that exists. And I think I read this, now please fact check my research, but you were the first ever sports science person for the Rangers.
Yeah. Like what you said is literally what happened. So I was the assistant strength and conditioning coach. And then eventually a question was proposed to me. It's like, do you want to do more of this computer stuff, or do you want to do more of the strength and conditioning stuff? And I said, you know, this computer stuff is interesting, so let's go with that. And then the next question is, well, okay, well, what do you do? Can you write up your job description? And that's kind of how it happened, more or less. But like you said, I think it's really important to explore your curiosities, because you don't know what your passions are until you get invested into your curiosities and find out, you know, what those passions are to begin with.
For sure. And you literally created a category. I mean, we talk a lot about in business and marketing, like you have to create a category, like break the category, and you literally made something that did not exist before. So I think that's super cool. You stayed with the Rangers for 6 years, correct? 6 years. What were some of the biggest lessons you learned over the course of that time? That might be too broad of a question, but take a whack at it.
Yeah, I learned a lot. I mean, I think all my colleagues would say that I did, because when I came in, I did a lot of things that were not okay, I guess. But it was, I think probably the biggest lesson that I learned was seeing from different perspectives So what I wasn't really exposed to too much to in college was, you know, I would do something and, you know, I'd have my perspective, the athlete would have theirs. And that was kind of it. But now, like when, for example, a report, let's imagine that you create a report and it has players' body weights on it or something like that. Knowing how the player is going to perceive that information, how the strength coach, how the athletic trainer, how the coaching staff, how management, and how the owner, how all of those different people that might be exposed to that information could perceive it. An example that I have is, and maybe people are probably going to be like, this is like so dumb, like you're an idiot. And I probably was, but I'm from Boston. So I had a computer skin on my laptop that was a Boston team, and the New York Rangers are owned by the Madison Square Garden company. And I kind of, you know, I'm a fan of the team. So I had it on my computer and I walked around with it on my computer for a long time. And then I was told to take it off, but I thought it was kind of a joke multiple times. So then eventually, like, there was a real hard sit down and said, you got to take that thing off. Like, could you imagine what would happen if the owner saw this? You'd be fired right away. I was like, I didn't think about that. So it's like little things like that. I kind of grew up through the Rangers. And I feel like a lot of the, I look at a lot of the staff members there as kind of being part of my family. Like, they kind of helped me grow up to a certain extent. I'm not there yet, but I made a couple steps in the right direction, I think.
Yeah. None of us are there, Adam. None of us are there. But I think that's a really, really cool anecdote to share, that a lot of strength conditioning and just coming up in the field is you kind of just have to grow up as a human being first and not necessarily learn everything there is to know about strength conditioning and sports science. With that, I do want to transition to sports science, because this is a role you kind of created, and you are one of the, I'm going to think of a better word after I finish the sentence, one of the cavaliers launching forward and creating sports science into the mainstream strength conditioning. So how would you define sports science, or what does that even mean when we talk about that in the field?
Well, I want to take a step back for a second, and I'm not a pioneer or a cavalier or whatever the word
pioneer
is in this, in this field. But Cavaliers are a basketball team. But the, you know, sports science has been around for a long time. It might not have been termed that way all the time. And it's still kind of, as you alluded to with your question, I mean, it's still an iffy definition there. It's not really well defined, but, you know, it has been done in other places outside of the US for a really long time to a high degree, overseas. And in the US, it had been done in other sports as well, but I think hockey is now starting to employ sports scientists and really get into that thing. Hockey is a little bit more traditionalist than some other sports. So I guess I was one of the first officially named sports scientists in the NHL. But with that being said, other strength coaches, like before I was a sports scientist, Reg was also the sports scientist. And I know a lot of guys in the NHL who are also the sports, they're the head strength coach, they're the nutritionist, and they're the sports scientist. So like all that stuff is being done. There just wasn't really a dedicated position for that. What it means is, I guess the way that I see it is utilizing physiology or information coming from an athlete's physiology in effort to optimize performance outcomes, which might be in hoping to reduce injury risk in certain situations, and also to literally just improve their performance for doing what they need to do on the ice, in specific to ice hockey.
Okay. That makes sense. So, it's basically, I'm just translating for my own brain that doesn't know a ton about sports science. You collect data and you use that data to make some kind of positive change, whether that's reducing injury, increasing speed, performance, et cetera.
Exactly. And I think one of the key differentiators just from, I don't know, actually, now that I think about it, why it's like sports science. Like, I think that we've had stats for a long time, like game stats, performance stats. But I think the key thing that differentiates, like, I guess the typical sports science, as we call it today, from that type of stuff is integrating physiology and having to have a good understanding of physiology to incorporate that information when making decisions that are meant to try to improve performance outcomes.
Okay. Yeah. And that's when what you do gets more specific, integrating the skills of a traditional strength coach with the science technology background and bringing in new data that hasn't been used before necessarily.
Exactly.
Cool. After 6 years of the Rangers, you went back to UVM to pursue your PhD, which I assuming is very related to sports science. So why don't you talk about why you decided to do that and what it is that, what research you're doing?
Yep. So 2 years, before, I'm a planner. 2 years before I left the Rangers, this was in place. And the reason for that was more of a family decision. That was a primary reason for it. But also it was to, this is going to get a little bit sad and I apologize. But one of the main reasons was also to pay back that professor that got me the original job with the Rangers. He is a professor at the University of Vermont, and I thought it would be nice to kind of share my experiences with him and we could work on research together as kind of like a thank you, I appreciate you thing. He ended up passing away recently of a sudden heart attack. So that's no longer there, but I have this new like kind of passion for going about research that I think that he would perceive as being valuable. So those are the two primary reasons why I started doing the PhD thing, was family and for him. And now it's just family, but partially for him. And the program, actually, they don't have any sports science stuff at UVM. The program is called Interdisciplinary Health Sciences. Before it was called Human Functioning and Rehabilitation Sciences. But I was confident that with this professor here that I could do sports science research, even though if the program wasn't geared towards that. So I'm continuing that pursuit and I am doing sports science research with the athletic performance department. And the primary things that I'm looking at are subjective questionnaires and how they relate to sports specific performance. So things like rating of perceived exertion and things like well-being, like stress or energy levels, perceived recovery, and how those coincide with sport-specific performance. And one of the things that's difficult about sport-specific performance is that it's really difficult to quantify, and it's really difficult to decipher the expectations of performance for an individual athlete using box score stats. Like if you're a fourth line player, what would you expect to see in the box score? Probably zeros across the board with some time on ice, maybe a couple hits. But that's about it. And
well, penalty minutes, right?
Yeah, penalty minutes. Maybe. Although that, you know, that's great, but also provides an advantage for the other team. Right? It's like, so if you're comparing athletes in their performance levels, if you're looking at goals and assists, you know, that's a great thing to look at if your primary job as an ice hockey player is to score goals or pass or get assists. So one of the things that I'm doing is I'm asking athletes how they perceive their performance to be, like great, giving themselves a grade on an A plus through F scale for every game. And then I'm also asking the coaches to grade each athlete on an A plus through F scale also, so that when we're looking at performance, we can understand whether or not the athlete, we're using the indicator of performance as whether or not the athlete's meeting the expectations that are set for them. And that I think that's an interesting thing that isn't done a lot, but that's an exciting part of the research. And with all these subjective scales that we're using, the end goal is understanding how they correspond with performance. But taking a couple steps back from that is people use in practice today scales that have colors on them, scales that are oriented in a lot of different ways. And those scales haven't gone through validation processes that the originally validated skills went through. So imagine, what was it, like 2000 or a little bit before that, there is a scale like rating of perceived exertion, and it's on a piece of paper or it's just in black and white, and it's it's not exciting. And now with all these new technologies out there, people are giving out scales through the technology that have like a colored slider, red to green, and they don't have the words that the other scale had, and doesn't have the numbers in the same orientation. So I'm trying to figure out whether or not these scales, when they're presented in this more modern way using technology, have the same validity as the scales as when they were presented in their older way. So to do that, we're collecting heart rate information from all the players to see how their perceptions coincide with the objective measures of work in regards to exercise.
Got it. So you're looking at subjective scores and comparing them to objective scores and seeing how objective our subjective feelings actually are. And do you have any, I'm not sure how far into the research you are, but do you have any predictions about our hypotheses about how that's going to look?
I did have them, and I don't have a final confirmation of them, but there's something that I was exposed to. So in the NHL, there's no in-game data. There are no wearables allowed in game, and that poses a problem when you're trying to assess the stresses that are going through an athlete's body over time, because you can collect data during practice, but you can't during a game. So you kind of have two options. You can either simulate that information to provide a more robust picture of what's been going on, or you could just give it a value of zero and totally disregard that information. And to simulate that information, for us, we use data from our AHL affiliate who could wear devices during games. So that, like, let's say you're looking at the past 3 days and two of those days were games, and for any given player, then you're only seeing what they did in practice if you give them zeros. But if you give them something that's based on the number of minutes that they played during the game, that corresponds with the, let's say, heart rate values from an AHL affiliate, then at least you have something to fill in that hole that's more accurate than zero, and you can have a more accurate depiction of what's going on. That's a long way of me saying I had a lot of looks at the AHL data, and I ingested that a lot. And what I noticed was, from a heart rate perspective, you know, you'd start up game one of a back-to-back-to-back, because that's, for whatever reason, that's how it is, right? So game one is here from, let's just say, heart rate load. Game two is here. Game three is here. Almost every time. To me, I felt that, you know, objectively, it looks like they're doing less and less. But in reality, I couldn't see a way where their level of effort would be less and less. And that made me question about how we're looking at training load. For example, let's say that someone's acutely fatigued, which would be present in, you know, a third game of a back-to-back. And their training load from an objective perspective, a heart rate perspective, isn't very high. But their perception is still very high. Then what's more important? Their actual effort and their perception of the effort, or that number that might be arbitrarily low just due to the presence of acute fatigue. So at UVM, I looked into that, and we're collecting RPE and the heart rate loads, and we play back-to-backs, but not back-to-back-to-backs or three and threes. And we're just seeing this. Essentially what we're seeing is that RPE stays the same regardless of game one or game two in a back-to-back, but we see that drop in heart rate. And that's kind of what I expected to see. And it's interesting to see also, because a lot of people like to say, oh, what are you collecting for internal training load? Are you collecting RPE or are you collecting heart rate? Well, they're not the same thing. So bucketing those two things together may not necessarily be a good comparison to make, or a good exchange to make if you're deciding what to do for monitoring training load. And that's kind of the takeaway from that. I don't remember what the question was, but I hope that I answered.
Yeah, we're meandering here. And I want to segue a tiny bit on Strength Coach Twitter. You're definitely one of the Excel guys. And every time you pop up, everyone's like, oh, yeah, check out Adam's new Excel video. What is it that you use Excel for? And why is it such a valuable, or Google Sheets, whatever, spreadsheet technology? And why is it so valuable to you as a coach and a sports scientist?
Okay. All right.
You can not answer that and just
No. This is a really good. This is actually a really good question, and there's been a lot of debate about this. When I was with the Rangers, I used Excel a lot, because the technologies that we invested in weren't able to provide the information that we needed to get in a way that I knew how to do it, at least, and in the way that was packaged within the platforms that were providing us with information. So I needed another way to get the information that I needed. And Excel was something that was cheap or free in my case, because I was a student while I was with the Rangers too. So I got Excel for free. I could play around and figure things out without asking for money. So that's where I started with the Excel stuff. And those videos, though, so I started at UVM last year and I started teaching, and they wanted me to teach, and they said, yeah, we want you to teach class, but we don't really like, we have this class and it's kind of like an okay class, but maybe just make up your own. I'm like, okay, fine. So I started teaching this sports science kind of based class. And with that, I was teaching my students how to use Excel and Google Sheets, because it's, I think they're really good teaching tools for understanding how to collect data and what errors can happen when you collect data in different ways, and then how to also visualize the information. And it's a very, it's not a very steep learning curve relative to other software out there. So yeah, I'll have an Excel project and we'll kind of work on this throughout the year. And then COVID hit in March, which was last spring. So our students at a certain point, you know, they were all remote, and they said, Adam, you know, this is a really fun project, but we don't have the resources that we need to get this done now, since we're not in person with you. So can you shoot videos of yourself doing this stuff? I said, yeah, sure. Well, like, where do you want it to go? And they say on the YouTube and stuff. So that's where it goes. And then eventually at one point I shared one of the videos on social media, because I thought it looked pretty cool, and it got a response that I wasn't really expecting. So that's how the Excel stuff came about. And I've kind of been running with that ever since, because people asked a lot of questions and wanted more of it. But from its use in, it depends on your setting. When you're talking about the value that it could provide, like strength and conditioning, like I think that creating programs, that's something that isn't really fun to do. Like, you wouldn't be able to really do that in an effective manner using like a R or something. Oh, maybe you could, but it's a lot easier when you see what's in front of you. That and Excel and Google Sheets provide that. And other software like coding platforms, they don't really provide that in the same way. So creating program templates, I think it's great for small little research projects. I think it's good for, and then also if you don't have that much time to learn a completely new software, I think it's also great for that, because the learning curve isn't that great, and it has a lot of different use cases. For bigger projects, if you're collecting time series, when I say time series data, if you're collecting data every couple of seconds during a game, or play-by-play NHL data, or larger data sets, then I would go to something else, because I think that it provides, you know, Excel only has so much capacity to handle information and visualize it.
When we're thinking about a strength and conditioning coach, what are some of the things that they should be looking at in terms of data, and how would you recommend they organize that in a spreadsheet format?
It depends on what's important to them, and it depends on what's important to the coaches and the people around them. Like, I give this, like, an athletic trainer, and I know you asked about strength and conditioning coaches, but athletic trainer perceives, you know, they have certain questions that they want to be able to answer on a daily basis, and the data that's collected for them to answer those questions might be different than what's collected for a strength and conditioning coach to answer questions that they have, which might be different than a coach. And like, from an organizational standpoint, what I see some strength coaches do that I wouldn't do is overwriting data, like for visualization purposes. What I mean by that is you have a dashboard, right? You have a pretty picture of the training week, and you type in, you know, what you want to do each day and recommendations for the coach. Oh, this should be a hard day, this should be a light day. And then the next week passes, or the next week comes up, then they overwrite that information with new information so that they can just print out the same page and give it to the coach. What I think would be more beneficial is collecting data in a more formal, organized format, and then segregating the visualization from that. So maybe you still have this one page of information that you're displaying for the coach, but you collect the information in a different way that looks really ugly, but you connect it to that visual piece of information. And then what that allows you to do is you can look at data from previous weeks and total, like, season averages and averages by player. It just gives you a lot more room for interpreting different things within the data that you're collecting.
right? And when you have the opportunity to look at all your data in a systematic, organized way, that's where you're going to find like things you didn't think of before, areas you didn't look at, possibilities to dig deeper.
Exactly. Exactly.
Cool. All right. That makes a lot more sense. Now I want to talk about, you even have, I'm looking at your website right now, which is very beautiful, by the way. I'm looking at your Excel course, Team Fitness Testing Framework in Microsoft Excel. So is this, tell us about the origins of this course.
I honestly don't even remember how that happened, but I had a bunch of videos take, and then I just figured, I don't even remember how it happened, honestly. But what it is it's what I did with the Rangers from in Excel for fitness testing. So we had a lot of talks, and it seemed to change every year, about how information should be calculated, how it should be displayed. Should we use standard deviation? Should we use, should we assign scores to things? Should we weight things differently? And so what this course essentially is it's a robust kind of solution to that, where you can like pick whether or not you want to create a score by a standard deviation or by the maximum and minimum values in the data set. And you can adjust, you know, the scores that you give people. Like, do you want the score to be from 1 to 5 or 0 to 100? Well, it automatically calculates that. It's kind of going through a whole framework of creating your own custom scoring system for displaying that displaying the fitness testing information in the way that you want, right? Because you can do 10 different tests or 50 different tests and have multiplied by the number, let's say you have 5 metrics per test, then you have like 250 metrics to look at. What this allows you to do is kind of create scores based off of multiple tests and bucket those metrics into different score categories, so that you can also provide a very succinct picture where, oh, is this guy powerful or not? All right, well, we have this score that's composed of these 4 testing metrics, and they're weighted in this way, and this is just their general power score. And then if you want more detail, you can double click on that, not actually double click on that, but you know, you can go into that and see, oh, here's where the test that he excelled in. So it's kind of giving a bigger picture view before you get into the minute details of the testing.
Really, then it's just what we just talked about. The previous question is, it's how do you take all this data and organize in a way that you can actually use? And you, in the course, go through step by step how to do that and give it a lot of suggestions for it. Does that sound accurate?
Yep.
Cool. Yeah. So, I mean, it sounds like definitely if you're in a team setting and you have to test a team, like, I know that's a lot of printing, a lot of test things and all that. So it could definitely be a really valuable resource. We were talking about how, back to the beginning, we were talking about how what I think is one of your superpowers is your curiosity and how that led you to an opportunity with the Rangers, how that led you to really kind of create your own thing. And it's, you're still taking it with you back at UVM. So what's something you're curious about right now and something you're really digging into and exploring?
My research, I'm focusing on that right now and trying to understand whether or not, so I'm curious as to whether all this objective data collection is necessary for making the decisions that we want to make. And there are always going to be issues, like, for example, rating of perceived exertion or well-being. Like, there are always going to be issues surrounding honesty. But at the same time, with the issues that I'm seeing with the objective measures that I'm collecting, heart rate, for example, and how that could be a misrepresentation of what's actually, how an athlete is actually feeling about the training that's going on. I'm really curious to better understand whether or not subjective measures can be used to give similar, if not more beneficial information when making more informed decisions than their objective, I was going to say objective counterparts, but that's not a good word to use. It's just objective measures. And the reason why that's important is because subjective measures are really easy to collect and they're free, essentially. And they can be, they're easily scalable. Like, imagine you have a mobile app. And one of the things going on today is early sports specialization, or kids are playing a lot of the same sport really early on in life, which can sometimes lead to increased, I mean, there's a lot of research on this that can lead to increased rate of injury and also just drop out of sport because they get sick of it. So being able to provide a solution that can expand into the youth market, that can expand into elderly general population and whatever, you just open up an app on your phone, you record how hard something was, and it tells you, I don't know, what, you know, maybe what, not necessarily give you guidance on what you should do the next day, but gives you insight about yourself. And it's just like any of the other apps that you, or any other like wearables that you wear on your wrist, and it gives you information that you can then use to potentially change a habit or change a decision that you're making. I feel that there could be a lot of value in that type of stuff.
I love the keyword you said there. I think that grabbed my attention was scalable, right? Because if you can, like you said, if you can replace objective data with subjective data, then now you can use that in any setting at all. You can, any personal trainer could use it, any strength coach could use it, any hockey coach could use it without needing to get a whole thing of heart rate monitors for a team, for example.
Yeah, exactly. And one thing that I want to be clear on though, is that also, I didn't mean, it may have came across, it did come across the way, but I didn't mean that it could replace objective measurements. It's just, it's different than objective measurements, but it gives people a means that if they can't afford, those types of devices.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think there's a lot more power in that because, you know, there are only 32 NHL teams, 32 AHL teams, and 60 something Division I teams in hockey. And besides that, like, most of us aren't going to be able to have all the toys. It's exciting stuff, man. I'm excited to read it when you're done with it.
Yeah. Talk to me in 10 years.
Is that when we'll be done?
Yeah. It'll be waiting a little while.
Yeah. I heard research can go like that sometimes. Anything else you want to mention to our audience? Any final thoughts, asked for the audience, et cetera?
I think my story is a good example that, you know, if you just, you need to, it's not enough to think about stuff. And it's not enough to read a lot of stuff. You kind of got to do stuff, if that makes sense. So I could have thought about sports science, like could have thought about the metrics a lot and been curious about them and not have done anything about it. And I could have thought about helping my professor and thought about all the cool things. But if I didn't actually like act on that and go do things, I don't know where I'd be today. So I think that taking action on your curiosities, if that's the word of choice today, is important.
Hear, hear. Very well said, Adam. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. We'll have links to everything, including where you can reach Adam on social media, his website, and his Excel videos and courses, which are also on his website. So once again, thanks again for joining us here.
No, thanks for having me. It's been a blast.
All right, we'll have to get a drink sometime if I'm ever back in Vermont.
I'm waiting for you.
Thank you, everybody, so much for listening. As mentioned, you can find all the show notes at prohockeystrength.com, and you can find Adam at adamvirgil.com, and we'll have all his social media links also in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoy this episode, and have a wonderful day.